you will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Tough Things First podcast, where we pick the brains of Ray Zinn, the longest-serving CEO in Silicon Valley and the epitome of entrepreneurship with inside of the Valley. Good morning, Ray. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Guy. Thank you for putting on this podcast with me.
Oh, man, I always love doing this, and I think today's going to be special. We're timing this particularly for the New Year's. Because we want to encourage all the entrepreneurs in your audience to make some resolutions. Entrepreneurs probably should make resolutions for themselves, for their company in the coming new year. And just like personal resolutions, it's something that you need to focus on for the entire year and to stick to it. So let's jump right into that. Why should an entrepreneur make New Year's resolutions for their company?
Well, you know, I don't think the problem is making the resolution. I think the problem is executing on that resolution. So that seems to be the trick is not just making a resolution, because we can all say, oh, you know, I'm going to lose 10 pounds or I'm going to, you know, do this or that, do more exercising or whatever. But until you actually have a execution program to go along with your resolutions, they're for naught. That's not my feeling anyway.
Well, it's funny you mention it that way, because statistically, most gymnasium memberships are sold in January. When people are really gung-ho about their New Year's resolution, and most people who buy a new gym membership are never seen again after January 31st. So,
well, I've even heard if you even keep 10% of the resolutions you make, you're at 90% level of the population. So at least 10% of them not even keeping any of it. There's 90% only keep about 10% of their resolutions. So, the key is not just to make the resolution, is to also execute on it. And I think that's the key thing, Guy. I know that you want to talk about some of the various resolutions that we should make, but I'd like to talk about executing. And there's actually having a program to execute on your resolution. So to do that, you need to not have more than five resolutions for the year, and preferably no more than two or three. Have a list of those resolutions that you will then focus on every single day, not just on Monday through Friday when you're at work, but also for the whole week. Because you're at home, or you're at least away from work at least a half to two thirds of the time. So, you need to have a develop that habit, H-A-B-I-T, habit of executing on those resolutions. So again, if you really want to make resolutions, I suggest not more than two or three, five at the most. So, pick two or three that you're absolutely going to commit to do. And then have this execution program that we're talking about, which is you have this list that has it reminds you like a calendar. Put it on your calendar and let it just remind you every single day of what you have committed to do. So, I think that can be done through your computer system, whatever device you have, allows you then to put down. It pops up maybe however frequently you want to pop up. It'll pop up, either every half hour or every hour or whatever. And it just to remind you to do something that you've resolved to do. So that's my thoughts on executing on your resolutions.
And I think that's great advice. In the 21st century, with all the technology that we have, there's no way that a resolution should be allowed to drop off of somebody's agenda. But the other thing that you said now has my attention. I think people can get overwhelmed if they come up with a list of 10 or 12 or 20 resolutions, because every day when they see that list, it feels too oppressive. And what you said was just a couple. Do you think that's intrinsic to the process, picking out the one, two, or three resolutions that are absolutely critical for an entrepreneur and his business in the coming year and just pounding on those relentlessly?
Absolutely. I mean, if you have 10 resolutions and you don't execute on any of them, you're going to become discouraged. You're going to say, oh, you know, there's another resolution I didn't achieve. So by having it, narrowing it down to, you know, one or two or three at the most, five at the most, but preferably two or three, then those, when they pop up on your reminder, then it's something for you to focus on, and you can develop a habit of focusing on these resolutions that you absolutely are committed to do. And, as they say, you know, a bad habit's easy to start and hard to break. A good habit is the opposite. A good habit is hard to start, but easy to break. So, because the natural man is there's a tendency just to fall back to, you know, as water seeks the path of least resistance, we tend to take the path of least resistance in our lives. And boy, developing these good habits are extremely, extremely difficult to achieve. And take no thought about this. It's definitely going to be something you're going to have to work very diligently on. As I have said years and years and years, you know, discipline is doing what you don't like doing and doing it well. So again, a resolution is something that you don't want to do, but you execute on it and you do it well because you develop this discipline of developing good habits. So the discipline of good habits is really the focus of this podcast.
And to phrase what you said differently, laziness is its own penalty. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that discipline, if you're not willing to apply it to yourself, you're going to invite your own failure, which kind of brings me to the other question. You know, the big part of being a boss, being a leader, being an entrepreneur is leading your staff. And it's one thing for the top dog to set a number of resolutions for himself. How does an entrepreneur instill a small set of resolutions to the entire organization for the coming year? What is it that an entrepreneur has to do to make people see and hold on to and execute to new resolutions for the company?
Well, what we did at Micrel was we had four cultures or four resolutions. Honesty is number one. Ethics, being ethical, is number two. The dignity of every individual is number three. And the fourth was doing whatever it takes, no excuses. So what we did is we just refocused every year on those four things, you know, honesty, integrity, dignity of every individual, and doing whatever it takes. So in the dignity of every individual is one I'd like to focus on right now, because I think everybody understands honesty and integrity. But dignity of every individual, at Micrel, we had a no swearing policy. In other words, you couldn't use foul language. That's something you can do, that you can get the whole company to get involved in, is having that concept of that resolution of no swearing, no vulgarity. And people like that. I mean, employees, once they get the handle on that, they've people who have left Micrel and then come back have said that what they miss the most is how nice people treated each other at the company by not using foul or condescending language. So that's something you can do as a company. But we focused on that every single year. Those four cultures were reinforced every year. So it was not like we had to develop a new one every year. We didn't come up with, like, because I was the CEO for 37 years, we didn't come up with 37 of them. We just focused on those four.
And I think that gets back to what we were talking about a moment ago, is that a small number of things that are critical to the operation of the business are much more important than focusing on a lot of them. In a recent article that you had, you had a number of resolutions that an entrepreneur probably should adopt in the coming year. And there were three of them which caught my attention. I thought that they were a little bit out of the box thinking, but also kind of critical to the survival of the entrepreneur himself. And so I wanted to talk about those for just a second. The first one that you said is that an entrepreneur should limit themselves to no more than 10 hours a day working and no more than 48 hours a week. How does an entrepreneur achieve that? And how do they avoid overworking themselves if there are gaps in their organization that seem to be driving them to work more and more hours?
That's a good one, Guy. You know, national average on employees, of course, is around that number of hours. Now, what employees want, if you look at the surveys that have been run, surveys show that employees want to work fewer hours. They don't want to work more hours. And being the head of the company, you set that example. And so to get your productivity up or keep it up and keep your company running efficiently, you know, you have to say, okay, well, how do I get more done in less time? So it's not work longer, it's work smarter, or we're not work harder, work smarter. And in our book, Tough Things First, we talk about, you know, doing the tough things first. In other words, outlining the two or three items in the day that you don't want to do. And all of us know those. I mean, we wake up every morning, we say, okay, here's the two things I don't want to do. And then we go do them first. So the very, 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 very first thing you do is you tackle those two things that you don't want to do. And once you do that often enough, you develop the habit of what we refer to as doing the tough things first, or eating that ugly frog before breakfast.
Hey, tell me more about that. I mean, eating an ugly frog for breakfast, that's kind of a tough sale. So what are the benefits to a business leader, to an entrepreneur, to an executive in sitting down at the desk first thing in the morning and taking that big, horrible task that's on the to-do list and knocking it out? What are the direct benefits that they're going to see for themselves? And then let's flip that and say, what are the collateral benefits that the organization is going to get by the entrepreneur doing that tough thing first?
Okay, so what we say and what we promise in our book, Tough Things First, is that if you will do the tough things first every day, you will increase your productivity by 20%. So now you can go to 8 to 10 hours rather than that 10 to 15 hours a day by just doing those tough things first, because we absolutely have shown by doing the tough things first, you do increase your efficiency by 20%. And I have proven that over the, 40 or 50 years that I've been working is by hitting those tough things and getting them out of the way first thing, my productivity accelerates, because I won't have that thought. I don't keep, oh, what, I got to get this done. Oh, I got to remember. So that takes mindset or mind share as you think about all the things that you didn't do that you should have done. You know, you had that procrastination habit. You just don't have that, so you don't think about that or dwelling on those things that you're dreading to do because you got them out of the way. And so getting them out of the way, you're more productive.
How does it affect the organization, though? Let's say that you've got an entrepreneur and he is every day religiously knocking out that one big thing that's on his nasty to-do list. How does that affect the organization?
Because they'll do the same thing, like father, like son, as they say. So, as you develop that habit of doing the tough things first, you'll see they'll do the same thing because often they're involved in that tough thing that you have to do. And you're going to get them involved in doing those tough things. And that's going to be the key to you increasing your efficiency by 20%. And then you can get to that 8 to 10 hour work day, as opposed to that 10 to 15 or that 12 to 15 hour work day. It's hard on your family. It's hard on you personally. You know, as they say, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, by you putting in all those hours, it's affecting your family. It may affect your marriage. It may affect how your children's do in school, or just the whole family dynamics in general is impacted by your inability to be home with them and have dinner with them and to interact with them and help them with their problems and life. Work smarter, not harder.
Well, I have to imagine that it also has some collateral benefits. I know for when I knock a tough thing off of my list in the morning, it adds clarity. I understand all the other work that I have to do because the big complicated problem has now been resolved. Does that have a similar effect throughout an organization by the leader, you know, getting his brain wrapped around the one big problem? Does that make the rest of the organization execute more effectively because the big issue has greater clarity?
Let me throw that right back at you. You know, you've worked for me for 4 or 5 years now, and I've noticed that you've improved in your ability to get to tough things done first and get things out of the way. So what have you found in the last 4 or 5 years you've worked for me?
Well, I found that the other people on our team are more responsive once the mission is better defined. So when I get the big thing off of my list and I realize that doing A is good and doing B is bad, then getting everyone else aligned is almost automatic.
But haven't you noticed that your efficiency has gone up? Have you been able to get more accomplished now that you've focused on getting those tough things first done?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah, because I've noticed it. So,
well, let me switch gears on you here, because this one I think is, to me, in the modern American context, possibly the most important. You've talked about having a resolution of having honest praise for employees. And a lot of business analysis has been done about how the greatest reward that you can give an employee is recognition for doing a good job. But you've taken it a step further, I think, in that a leader has to be aware all the time and take every opportunity to authentically praise an employee for doing something well. Talk about that for a bit, because in my experience out in the corporate world is that praise is not always authentic. And a lot of time it's just haphazard. It happens when a boss is under pressure to, you know, perform some sort of miracle. So talk to me about continuous authentic praise for employees.
Okay. So surveys show that the primary reason employees leave a company and seek other employment is not for higher position or more money. It's because they had difficulty with their supervisor. And so if you want to improve your retention rate, you know, because losing employees is a cost to the company. I mean, you have to train a new person and you lose efficiency. And so you want to get your turnover down below, you know, 15%. And hopefully down below even 10%. And to do that, you're going to have a happy workforce. And so when we look at how do you make a happy workforce is number one. If you know what they're doing and you praise them often enough, you'll just see that they just like when you, you know, want to train a dog or train an animal, you know, you have this reward thing you hand out there and it's nothing fancy. It's just that pat on the back, as they say, you know, and that just recognizing what they're doing. They love praise. I mean, I've in my 37 years and thousands of employees that have worked for me, I've noted that praise is the single most important thing that will help improve your turnover amongst your people. So if you want to have low turnover, if you want to have a more productive workforce and happier workforce, is through praise. Find ways. So one of the resolutions that I think you should make is that look for reasons, seek out the good. In other words, seek reasons to praise your people. And when you do, you'll see that they really will rally behind that. You know, authentic praise is not just, oh, hey, nice job, buddy. You know, it's finding something that they've done and then recognize them for it, either by sending an email out to them and copying the supervisor or others, or by sitting down with them and say, oh boy, that was a really a neat idea you came up with. And that shows you're interested in what they're doing. You're not just a number or a face in the company.
Well, I have a hunch, given the general societal animosity that exists today, this very harsh environment that we live in, that a little extra praise with inside the company is going to make the company look like a spiritual, wholesome, wonderful place to be every day. And that's just going to lift employees' spirits even further.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, they say praise goes a long ways. And one negative or bad comment will ruin the whole day and ruin a person's week. You know, whether it be this bullying sort of thing that goes on, or whether it's you know, just these nasty comments that we make, or the lack of recognition an employee receives, you know, it's gonna have a big impact on your company and society. So, you know, do your part for society. Have a happy workforce.
Well, and speaking of praise, I have to heap a little bit of praise on you. What your audience may not realize is that a huge part of what you do in the writing of the books, the producing of this podcast, with a campus outreach program that you have called Zen Starter, is that you are giving away 50 years of experience in Silicon Valley, 37 years as an entrepreneur and a CEO of a publicly traded company. You're basically giving this away to all the would-be entrepreneurs out there in the world with the intent, and you've stated this rather bluntly, of making them more successful, making them more survivable, excuse me. And so I want to, you know, as long as we're doing authentic praise, let's put that on the table. You deserve some authentic praise for making sure that the next generation of entrepreneurs build enduring businesses that last for generations and are actually serving the public good and mankind in general, because, you know, what they do for a living really affects society directly and indirectly.
Well, thank you, Guy. I appreciate that. Well, you know, I tell my people when I bring them on board, I'm hiring a new employee, I tell them I'm not here to make you rich. That's something you have to do. That's your challenge. But what I will do, what I will promise you, I will do, I will help you become a better person. And if becoming a better person is of value to you, come work for Mike Rell or come work for me. That's always been my mantra is, no, won't make you rich, but I'll sure help you become a better person.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with becoming a better person. I think we all can put a little bit more diligence into that every day. And speaking of diligence for your audience, Ray's two books should be on your reading list and should be part of the diligence that you're executing to yourselves. The first one, of course, Tough Things First. It was Ray's manifesto on management and leadership in his 37 years in Silicon Valley. And it's an entertaining read. I won't relate the story about being naked in the bathroom of a ranch house, but that's, you know, pretty much the way the book starts, and it gets more entertaining from there. And his other book, The Zen of Zen, not directly on the management and leadership line. It's much more the philosophical relationship of people and business and society. And it gives you a lot of out-of-the-box thinking in terms of why this all fits together and what your role and how you can progress as a human being and, you know, as an employee or a leader with inside of society makes it all work better. So by all means, drop by Amazon today, get those two books, get two of them since we're in the new year, and give one away to somebody who could use that little spiritual lift. Well, thanks again, Ray. It's been great. And for the audience, tune in again next week for another episode of Tough Things First.
Thanks, Guy. Look forward to meeting with you again.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.